The Australian Defence Magazine podcast. Serving the business of defence. With Grant McHerron.
Welcome back, folks. Today I'm talking with Matt Kirk, the Director of Trusted Workforce at WorkSec, and we're going to be discussing the importance of a trusted workforce. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Grant, and thanks for having me. I even trimmed my beard and wore my WorkSec orange and black military pressed collared shirt. So great to be talking to you, mate.
Yep, it's very good to see that we've dressed up for audio.
exactly.
Let's get into the meat right away, because this one could go a little long with what we've got to cover. Can you give us an overview of the current workforce issue?
Currently, we have immense requirement for cleared personnel across baseline NV1, NV2. Commonwealth, of course, does the TSPV, but the area that we specialise in is up to NV2, and more those roles are being sought across defence and government, and of course in defence and government industry as well.
And so basically the problem isn't about technology and projects, it's about the trust?
Yeah, look, you're exactly right. We can all have the most wonderful cyber and, you know, defence secure. We can have wonderful facilities and perfect locks and all the latest tech and gadgets with regard to facilities. But the final piece of the puzzle, and probably one of the most important part of the puzzle, is a cleared personnel. And like you say, that personnel needs to be trusted, hence WorkSec Trusted Workforce. So we build that workforce, and there's, you know, a large degree of vetting that goes on, obviously, at the government, the AGSFIR element. But then in the front end, our role, we're mandated to do checks in the front end so that those people, number one, have a checkable background. They're obviously Australian citizens at this point. That's another topic of discussion for later. And also, we do things like social media digital footprint check. We get personal referees, business referees. We provide security awareness training, insider threat awareness, a whole range of things that people need to run through. And so we can ensure that they're trusted, then push through to AGSFIR, and then AGSFIR and the outsourced vetting company do their mandatory checks on the vetting side.
So I've heard the phrase that with defence, if you're not cleared, you're not in the room. So, yeah, this is quite the bottleneck of, I guess it's creating a bit of a backlog.
Look, most definitely. And with respect to exactly that, if you can't be in the room, you could be invited into a meeting and someone hasn't, prior to the meeting, checked if you've got, let's call it an NV1, so a secret clearance, you will actually have to physically leave the room, which, apart from being having wasted everyone's time, it's also pretty embarrassing, right, to have to walk out of a room. So it's vital to, you know, tick off all these requirements before you get to meetings, before you start the tendering process, and get what we call in the industry, you know, defence and government ready. So you're ready to go on task straight away.
Like, are projects being delayed because people aren't cleared?
What we find is that, and it's interesting because I have corporates who will come through to me saying that at the 11th hour, the question was asked, do your personnel, are they cleared? And it's like, oh, hang on a second, I wish you'd mentioned that 2 months ago. So that is clearly a delay for that company. And it's not just one, it's like several that I do get through, let's call it a couple a month, who have that, you know, obstacle that they weren't aware of. So again, it's about getting your personnel ready prior to, you know, winning the tender and putting that in your tender, obviously, that you have X number of cleared personnel. And the client or defence will dictate how many you need and at what level, so you can get ready for that. And that's when we start engaging and consulting with our corporates.
And I guess with AUKUS, both Pillar 1 and Pillar 2, there must be a massively increased demand for cleared personnel here.
There is indeed. And I touched on the Australian citizen side a couple of minutes ago. But yeah, look, to cover that in the first instance, yes, an increasing, you know, the chart is going up and up exponentially. for obvious reasons, which started with, you know, Ukraine and Russia, of course, and then what's happening as we speak right now in April 2026. But there's going to be, and there is already, a situation where we don't have in Australia a range of, let's say, people, you know, nuclear scientists for our, you know, submarines and AUKUS. At the moment, the requirement is to be an Australian citizen, like I said. And again, we were dealing with a company, a Korean company, and we were not able to help. The only way that a non-Australian citizen can get through is a bilateral agreement between DOD, let's say DOD Australia, DOD US. Then, even then, it's got to be mandated and ticked off and endorsed by a 2- or 3-star general. That's going to be pretty hard to get for someone who is not DOD, given that the general's not going to take the risk on that person. So we're going to have to open it up at some point in time. This is discussion quite a lot when I'm around the country on opening it up to, and at least, you know, opening up to, let's say, the Five Eyes, you know, those who are cleared within the Five Eyes, maybe, you know, special waiver, and make that process easier. So.
Yeah, that has been recognised. I was at the AUKUS Pillar 2 discussions at Congress, and they were discussing that, it's great what they're doing about the licence-free environment, but could they do something about equal recognition of security clearances?
Yeah, exactly. I've got a lot of US contacting me at the moment, even our lovely friends in New Zealand. And a lot of people are scratching their head saying, but why? I'm fully cleared in the US. I'm fully cleared in the UK or New Zealand. Let's push this through. I say, at some point in time, it will happen. It's like, you know, it won't happen overnight, but it will happen. Thanks, Rachel Hunter. But the way it is at the moment, it's difficult. There are instances where some of the larger defence crimes have been able to do it. At this point in time, a sponsor, privately owned companies such as WorkSec, are not able to do it.
Yeah, it's having the clout and the need, I guess, because I mean, I'm hearing this is a lot of reasons why this hasn't been fixed, but would you say that because it's shared across so many parties, multiple countries within industry, plus also we're fighting for defence staff to get the clearances to come and work with us against people who might otherwise go and work in the mines or things like that?
Well, exactly. And there's the element as well where in private sector where we must be able to, we meaning, you know, Australia or the Australian corporate, must be able to prove that they are unable to find someone within Australia to do that role. So that's the typical thing in employment across, you know, public and private sector, right? So, I'll give a shout out to AGS for, and, you know, Kate Dan at DIST, for instance, doing a magnificent job with immense change and having to evolve and adapt so quickly to a landscape that, again, as we all know, is just changing almost, you know, hour by hour as we speak right now. But and it's been that progression since AGS for DISP opened up to private-owned companies, which was, funnily enough, the 9th of April 2019, exactly 6 years ago today. And I can easily remember it because it's my son's 21st birthday today. So, happy birthday, Oscar. But look, that's and the reason that it was opened up, you know, in AGSFA's wisdom was that they were, you know, requiring more companies or external private companies to do what we do to bear the load. So they are doing a great job. The amount of, you know, DISP members, for instance, it used to be called DISP accreditation, now it's DISP membership, is just, again, exponentially increasing. Every single metric that you can look at is going up on a monthly basis.
So this is obviously putting a lot of risk into major projects. Do you ever see this being identified and reported on by the Commonwealth?
No. I suppose that's part of, you know, internal classified information. There's nothing publicly available. And from a privacy perspective, you know, other DISP members can't even see who other DISP members are. So at that level, yeah, I think that things are so rapidly changing and so everyone's got so many things on their plate. And, you know, wearing so many hats. Everyone's doing a great job. And defence have got better and better with regard to opening it up to, you know, some of the not just defence primes, obviously, but those in the supply chain of defence primes to really reduce the timeframes from years to months, which, again, is what we need. We're talking months now with regard to increasing being ready and capable.
So clearly this topic of clearances is important to all the projects and the work going on. But is that basically to make sure you can trust your workforce? If you've got a workforce that isn't cleared and so on, what are the threats?
The biggest one that everyone talks about clearly is, you know, insider threat, which is exactly what this addresses. So you can never 100% guarantee, but I tell you what, between what we do and what AGSFA do, the amount of checks that are done, like I said, significant and very in-depth. So, we can get cyber right as much as possible, but then we have to continue advancing and spending more money on tech, let's say, and cyber. But it really is that coalface ability to vet a human. And the variable will always be a human being. And that's what, you know, like I said, we specialize in and AGSFA do as well. So, you know, it's getting there. There was a 60 Minutes program on the, a couple of weeks ago with regard to, and that was specific more to the corporate sector with regard to, let's say, nefarious players being involved. Now, the private sector aren't doing the checks that we're doing and that AGSFA are doing, the Australian government are doing. So I would suggest that needs to step up there as well. The insider can always and does always have access to not just networks, but also we're seeing a heck of a lot of companies, particularly in the top end, so in far north Queensland and Darwin, who are doing a lot of infrastructure and state building. So tradespeople who previously would have to be, you know, escorted around a facility, a defence facility, let's call it, which is a pain for everyone, right? People don't have time for that. Then it was pushed through to a lot of, let's say, sparkies and chippies and plumbers need baseline. Now, the ones that we're doing for all of those tradespeople are at NB1 level. Even people who are delivering furniture, let's say, into defence and government facilities, they need to be cleared as well. One would say, why is that? Well, they are, if they're in the halls and in the kitchen, in the staff room and so on, they are then going to potentially privy to conversation where people should be obviously, you know, not blabbing stuff, but walking past different, you know, hardware, planes and tanks and subs, seeing things, hearing things. They need to be cleared because that's information classified stuff that they could pass on if they're not trusted.
Okay, so skills can be trained, but trust must be verified and so on. How is WorkSec helping to resolve that workforce trust issue?
Yeah, in a range of ways, apart from what we've discussed already there with regard to, again, things like the employment suitability check, which is mandatory in the front end for us to do, and then the AGS for vetting, the additional things that we do. So I said it's like a vitamin B. You know, you don't just take vitamin B once or twice, you take it every day. Now, security awareness training, things like that, security awareness training, security policies and plans, insider threat awareness. As a human, we'll see that sort of thing and we'll be asked to do top-ups annually. We have our clients and our cleared clients do regular security awareness training so that it is in the forefront. It is not an administrative burden. And the best way that a security clearance holder and a company and anyone in this defence and government space can think and have it in the front of their mind is that this is all about protecting Australia's national security. There's no guarantees 100%. Well, you know, the only thing we can guarantee, right, are death and taxes, but we guarantee that we do as best as we possibly can to ensure that these people are not just trusted in the front end, but they continue to be drip-fed the information. And we do that actually by providing our corporates with I won't tell you exactly what it is, but if any corporate wants information that they can have in their workplace and they're on their shop floor and in their kitchen and so on, then you can always reach out. So this is it's like the airline card. We don't just jump onto an aeroplane, and particularly when you're in the exit row, right? You're actually asked to read the card, not just say, oh, well, okay, I've done this before. So if we think about it like that, you know, it's constant top-up. So it's like the requirement for vitamin B. It's the requirement to continue to have that tattooed on our somewhere to say, I am protecting Australia's national security, so I'm taking this seriously. And security awareness training is not boring. It's vital in the mix of my toolbox.
Now, before we started recording, there was the phrase security officer as a service mentioned. So hypothetically, I'm running a small, medium company, 40, 50 people. If I'm doing dismembership and I'm processing clearances, I have to set up an extra person or two to handle all that, to be my company security officer and so on. So if I was going to engage with WorkSec, how would that process occur?
What you want to do is to focus on your core business. Again, let's use the, you know, making nuts and bolts for planes and tanks and subs, or anything in the cyber or anything ICT. That is your area of expertise. That's what you do brilliantly. Corporates who come across us and realize, if they haven't already, that they can actually outsource this capability of all the governance and compliance, i.e. security officer as a service, visibly and audibly a sigh of relief. It is definitely, thank God, I don't have to do it. Yes, I know it's vital and very important, but everyone's got the same sort of hours in the day, and it's more often than not their third or fourth task that can be, not meaning to be, shunted as the fourth task out of 1, 2, 3, 4, given their core business is number one. So for them to be able to outsource this, we've got more than a handful of defense primes who have contacted, and we now clear their and sponsor their personnel. So we do all of, within that security officer as a service, there's the mandatory requirements, including what's called NABE 644. Okay, what is that in, you know, normal language? That's the overseas travel briefing. Then we've got the way that we do it is actually easy, and as much as forms can be pleasurable, it's pleasurable the way that we do it. So that's overseas travel briefing, overseas travel debriefing, like we spoke about, additional and top-ups of security awareness training, insider threat awareness. We even do, you know, random social media digital footprint checks along the way. We do an annual police check. Don't forget, between a 12-month period, someone may well have, you know, rubbed up against the boys in blue. Have they reported or not? Well, we're going to find out, because we'll do, at our cost, an additional police check. These companies just don't have the time necessarily. Whilst they may see it and understand it in their hearts that it is crucial, at the end of the day, there's a time aspect of it. So once again, to outsource that to us, knowing that it's going to be done 100%. So those companies who are DISP members also have to be very, very careful that they are doing the governance and compliance tasks 100%. You can't get into, you know, an ASR, you know, annual audit, or a, you know, deep dive audit with DISP and pull up your security incident register or your overseas travel register and say, we did overseas travel briefings on 86% of our personnel because we won a tender, and that's wonderful, but we were too busy. Sorry, we don't run into 86. This will say 86% is not good enough. It's not sure be right, mate. It's got to be 100%. So that's when they just go, again, thank you. We can outsource this. We have a relationship clearly on a daily or weekly basis with our corporates, and they can report anything to us, and we provide guidance so that they can basically just get on with their core business.
And if I'm running the company and wanting to get into DISP, and I've got the outsourced service with WorkSec. DISP acknowledges that, and that's fine. It's that to be very bottom level, it ticks the boxes. It's not like that you have to, as a business owner, go through extra work to get DISP to agree to an outsourced security officer and so on.
No, there's nothing additional. You can simply note, the WorkSec are providing the GNC. Clearly, a DISP member still needs to have a chief security officer, a CSO, and then those other tasks that we just ran through can be outsourced. The stuff that is, it's not boring, but funnily enough, we're able to somehow make governance and compliance. We've actually been called sexy. With regard to how we do it. And I think that's more so, relating to our systems and very high tech. We talk about WorkSec being high tech and high touch. The high tech is we're at the forefront of, systems and cyber and making the process, as streamlined and easy as possible. The high touch element obviously relates to me personally, for instance, being available 365 days a year, basically 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. People would go, Matt, how do you have work-life balance? Well, at my age, I'm still young, but I'm sort of north of 50, let's call it. If I haven't sussed out what work-life balance is, then sort of take me out the back paddock. I know what that is, but I actually love helping people. I say everyone at WorkSec in their DNA and genetically coded to help people. So that's what we do. So for me to take a phone call on a Sunday afternoon, which is generally about 60 seconds to get them through. Thursday night, 8 o'clock at night after they've had dinner, they get that through. So, and that's for all individuals that we clear. It's for all personnel, all corporates have access by phone, email, text at any time.
So we've gone through, and you mentioned before that WorkSec can sponsor clearances and so on for your corporate clients, but clearance is important for an individual, but most situations are you get the job, then you get the clearance if you don't already have one. How does that work out for what's important to a person if they can get a clearance before they have to do the work?
Yeah, and look, it's the chicken and egg situation, isn't it? There are elements that are, again, mandatorily required, which means that an individual who wants to get themselves defence and government ready so that they will actually be chosen to front up for an interview needs to have already, and sometimes just already in progress, a security clearance. So let's think about in other industries. If you want to work with children, you need a blue card. Two people go for the same job working for children. One's got a blue card, one doesn't. Then they want that person to start tomorrow with a blue card. Blue card takes a few months, so guess who they're going to choose. So this is about getting defence and government ready. There's a interesting thing within the industry where there can't be seen to be any discrimination, and that's where you'll see on Seek or LinkedIn or recruiters' job ads must be able to obtain a security clearance. Now, some of these roles that are being offered, some of the companies I know are getting 200, 300, 400 applicants. We all know that AI, beautiful AI, will filter out, so let's call it a computer is being discriminatory. So they will be filtered out if they don't have a clearance. Again, we've used the example of NV1 in the middle a few times. So NV1 takes around about 3 months to be granted. You and I, both great people, great skills and experience. You've got a clearance, Grant, and I don't. I do, but I don't in this example. Then guess what's going to happen? And I'll just leave it at that. People need bums on seats tomorrow, not we'll wait for you for 3 months.
Or longer if they've got to get higher. So, yeah. I get that. And so could a person come to WorkSec and say, hi, I would like to get work in defence. Let's get me my clearance. And so I guess I would have to pony up the cash for that. But then they could have that clearance and then go out and get jobs because they've got it.
Yeah, spot on. So what they need to provide us with, apart from the other elements that I've spoken about, is what's called, we all have acronyms, right? A DSAP. So that stands for Designated Security Assessed Position. So that means that there's the requirement under DSPF and PSPF in the frameworks to provide the reason as to why you require a clearance. And that's, let's use an example, I'm a business analyst or an infrastructure engineer, and those roles that I'm seeing require an NV1. So that is the reason why I'm going for, applying for a clearance. And just sort of rounding out that as well, you know, the whole aspect at the moment, clearly and globally, is mental health. And you probably wonder why I'm mentioning that. Well, I'm seeing that people within the space, it's affecting their mental health because they're saying, what is wrong with me? I'm applying for, I had one bloke yesterday, a bloke I spoke to on the weekend, had a coffee with him. He had applied for 500 jobs over the last year. You know, that's a full-time job doing that, right? But unpaid. Now, he's wondering why he's not getting called up. Obviously, he didn't have a clearance. In his example, he was actually US, had a clearance in the US, but he's not an Australian citizen, and we've mentioned that. But what's happening is, and we're all banging on about, let's ensure that people's mental health is shipshape, but we're not coming back to people, and we're not telling them why they're not being interviewed. And the reason, a lot, not always, is because they don't have a clearance. So why are we seeing it as discriminatory? It's not discriminatory. It's ticking a box. Like the blue card, if you want to drive a semi-trailer, guess what? You got to have a semi-trailer, you know, truck driver's license. Then you can get behind and go through the 38 gears. You know, so we've got to start helping these people. And let's just say it right now, addressing the mental health aspect of people thinking there's something wrong with them when there's clearly not. It's just they don't have a clearance.
So clearly, if you can and you're wanting to get into defence, identify some jobs, work with WorkSec to get a clearance, and it's like an investment in your career, isn't it?
Exactly. It's like a university degree. It is the ticking of the box. It's giving you that power and strength to know that you are worthy of being, you know, holding a security clearance. So you have deemed to be holding those characteristics, trust, loyalty, maturity, resilience, all of those fun and vital things that you need as a human to be working on classified information. Again, let's go back to, hey, protecting Australia's national security.
Okay, well, this has been a great chat up to here. So we've clearly got a situation that looks like there's some opportunities, but what's at stake if we don't fix this problem? And what should companies and possibly even government be doing to help?
Yeah, I guess what's at stake is that it's the bottleneck. It slows down for those absolutely brilliant companies. Some very, the phrase here is, you know, the Aussie battler quiet achievers. There's a bunch of those who have brilliant capability to assist defence and government. So to assisting them to get in the supply chain, like I said as well, defence have been wonderful by saying to defence primes, hey, let's open the door for these, as we call it, the mums and dads who are out there in the Granite Belt, you know, in areas all across Australia, Tasmania, huge hub now as well. People would be surprised, but there's last count 64 companies in Tasmania that have defence contracts. 5 years ago, you were looking at about a handful. So look, the idea is for defence and defence primes to continue doing great jobs of working with some of our SMEs to get them in supply chains. To pass the work around, because there's some just brilliant things that are going on, whether it be cyber or, you know, working with over the horizon radar systems. Some of the stuff is world class, and we just don't really hear much about it, and that's fine because a lot of it is, you know, need to know and classified, etc., obviously. But yeah, we're getting there, albeit probably slowly, but it is hastening, again, for obvious reasons. But it's getting better, Grant.
Well, it's great to know that while the issue does exist, there are some opportunities and the situation is getting better. So, of course, you know, you can't deliver defence capability without trusted people, as the other saying also goes. But Matt, thank you very much for coming on the show and explaining the situation and what the opportunities are to resolve the whole issue of trusted workforce.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Grant. Appreciate it.
And of course, thanks to everyone for listening once again. And don't forget, if you enjoyed this episode, you can follow this podcast in your favorite podcatcher to ensure you get every episode as they're released. Meanwhile, thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back in the not too distant future with another informative episode.
The ADM podcast is produced by Southern Skies Media on behalf of Australian Defence Magazine, a YEFA media title. The views of the people appearing on this podcast do not necessarily represent the views of Australian Defence Magazine, the Department of Defence, or the guest's employer. If you wish to use any of the audio in this podcast, please contact Australian Defence Magazine via their website, australiandefence.com.au, or via email at defmag@yeffa.com.au.
You've been listening to a Yaffa Media podcast.
Southern Skies Media.